So right now I want you to please say and spell your name for me.
My name is Paul Edwin Wasson. My first name is P-A-U-L, the middle name is Edwin D-D-W-I-N. The last name is Wasson, W-A-S-S-O-N, Senior.
What is your date of birth, including the year?
My date of birth is September the 8th, 1923.
How would you describe your ethnic background?
I'm African American.
What is your religion, if any?
I'm a Baptist.
What is your highest level of formal education that you've completed?
10th grade.
10th grade. Did you attend any additional school or formal career training?
I had the arc welding. I went to school for arc welding. Arc welding.
Okay, arc welding. What is your marital status?
I'm married.
You're married?
Yes. Okay.
How many children do you have?
I have 4 kids. No children.
How many siblings do you have?
I had 2 siblings, 2 girls. They're both dead, deceased.
What was your primary occupation?
Primary occupation is a laborer.
Were you ever paid for work in addition to that? Did you do anything in addition to that? You said you were a laborer.
Laborer. Working jobs that, you know, was available.
And at what age did you retire?
1965.
So you've been retired quite a while.
Yes, a little while.
Now, I'm going to jog your memory to ask you some questions about your childhood and your youth. What was your family like when you were a child?
I had a pretty good family life. We lived with my grandmother and grandfather, me and my mother. My 2 sisters, they married early, back then, so they was gone.
What sort of work did your parents do?
My grandmother did stayed at home. My grandfather worked on the railroad. And my mother worked day work.
Okay. Were there any special days, events, or family traditions that you remember from your childhood?
Yes. I can remember from 4 years old. My mother and my grandmother and myself, we'd go to Georgia on Sundays, probably once a month, and have big dinners. My aunt had kind of a farm, but she kept the keys to the jail. She was a person that cooked for the jail, but she kept the keys. And we'd go there on a Sunday because that was the day off. And we'd go, but we'd come back kind of early, coming from Georgia.
Was that fun?
Yes, it was fun. It was lots of fun. I got to see something I didn't see was chicken, pigs, my aunt had all of those things. So I would be out there running.
So you said you drove to Georgia from where?
From Chattanooga, Tennessee.
How are or were holidays traditionally celebrated in your family?
Traditions were the holidays.
Christmas.
Christmas, New Year's. We'd even celebrate Halloween. And Thanksgiving.
Did you do any kind of special things during these holidays? Any kind of special that your family did on Christmas, Thanksgiving, or whatever?
Tradition, everything.
Just traditional, just traditional. Did your family have any special sayings or expression during this time that you remember?
No.
No.
They didn't have it.
Okay. You told me before that the 10th grade was the highest grade that you completed.
Yes.
Did you do any sports or join any other activities outside school?
Well, I played a bass horn in school in the 10th grade. They had football. This is when I was at Booker T. Washington High School. And we would play ball on the outside, but we didn't have balls. So we got old stockings and rolled them up and taped them around for the ball we had. We played ball like that. That's the ball we had.
Okay. What about your school experience? Now, where did you go to school?
Archinab Junior High.
And this was in Tennessee? Are we still in Tennessee now?
Yes.
Okay.
This is in Chattanooga.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about what your school experience and how it's different from school today as you know it?
Well, it's a lot of difference. Here, you had a little more leeway than you had down the south.
And more leeway how?
They didn't pick up men on the street and search them and all kind of stuff like that. And they hadn't done anything. But they did down there. And other things that they would, the guys would come, white fellas would come on the corner where the guys, black guys, used to stand and ask them, did they want to work? And they say, yes, because they didn't have a job. Well, you take the name down and tell them to be there in the morning at 6 o'clock or 5:30 or whatever time it's at. And they'd come there and there'd be 8 or 10 black people there. And you'd tell them to get on a truck. And they'd get on the truck, go out to work. And some of them was never seen no more.
Wow. Were there any changes in your family life during the time, during your school years? Like, were mother and father together all the time, or did someone pass away, or any changes, or you moved, or?
There was nobody but me and my mother after my sister's married. My sister's married 15, and the other one married 17, I think it was. It was me and my mother, and we stayed with my grandmother. And after that, we moved into our own house, my mother and I.
Okay. When thinking back on your school years, can you think of any important social or historical events that were taking place during the time you were in school that personally affected your family?
No, I didn't have anything that affected my
family. Was anything historically going on during your childhood?
Well, war was on.
The war?
The welfare. Everybody had to get on the welfare. It would, they'd give you coal, a half a ton every two weeks. They'd give you soup. It's a soup house. You'd have to carry a bucket and go down there, and you have a card you punch. And they would fill up the bucket with it, punch out the card, and give bread and stuff away. And you'd take them and you'd turn around and walk back. You had about a 3-mile walk. But we walked it, and it was cold.
It was cold?
Yeah, it was cold. Mm. It was, you know, we didn't have no car or anything, so people were walking.
Mm-hmm. You lived during the era of segregation. Can you speak about that? Was your school segregated in Tennessee?
My school was segregated. We had black teachers. We didn't have any white teachers. The sports that the guys play now, you didn't get a chance to play too much sports because they didn't have money to buy sports in the school. So you made up whatever you wanted to do.
Was the elementary school near your home?
Yes. Elementary school was about 4 blocks from...
So you walked.
About 4 blocks. And you'd walk to school. You walk back from school.
Was there a high school for black students in the same area?
Yes. That's when I was it. Just moved to the 10th grade. I went to Booker T. Washington School, and that was another black school. And I went there because they had games, football, baseball, almost everything that the white schools had, but they didn't have but a few of those, and just a few kids could get into them. So the easiest thing for me to play was a bass horn.
Okay. Were you good at it?
Well, it went boop, 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 boop.
You mentioned before that you had black teachers, so, and no white teachers at all.
No.
Okay. And that was through high school?
That was from starting
elementary
school
on
up until high school.
Through high school. Were there any eating places or restaurants that where you lived that blacks couldn't go to?
It was restaurants. It was, I couldn't count about 4 black restaurants. And then it was some Greek restaurants.
Could blacks?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They wanted the money. They were after the money. Mm-hmm. So you could go there and get a 5-cent sandwich, tripe sandwich. You know, they had hot dogs and different things. So when you had some money, you'd go and sit up on a stool and eat.
How were black visitors accommodated when they came down, like from the north? Were there places that they could stay? Or?
Yes, we had a hotel there.
Black hotels?
Black hotel. And when the bands came down, like Duke Ellington, Cab Calloway, all the bands would come down to the auditorium. My whole bringing up around there, I never heard anything. When they come to town, they had a one-night stand. He said, one night over, and everybody in town could go, with that.
Mm-hmm. So they couldn't stay in white hotels?
No.
Okay, I'm going to ask you about your adult life and marriage and family life. And this is going to cover a fairly long period. After you finished high school, where did you live?
With my mother.
And your mother was?
We lived in a three-room house, me and my mother.
It's still in Tennessee?
After I quit school, I had to work to substitute money for my mother's bills.
Okay. From the time you completed your education and entered the labor force or started a family until all your children left home and you in your and or your spouse retired, where were you? After you married and your children left home and then you retired, where were you?
Retired.
Mm-hmm. After you retired, where were you then?
After I retired, I built a house after I retired.
Where?
I built a house off a package in Ann Arbor. Across from the school there, one house and two lots.
You built it.
Yes.
So we've missed something here. When did you come to Michigan? When did you?
First of 1943.
1943.
The first of 1943.
And how old were you then? Do you remember?
I was about 19.
About 19. Okay. So you've been in Michigan. Has it all been in the Washtenaw County area?
Okay. Washtenaw County, Ypsilanti, and Ann Arbor.
Okay.
I lived in both places.
And that was in 1943 when you first came?
Yeah.
So did you come by yourself then?
Yes, I came by myself on the bus.
On the bus? With all your belongings?
With a pasteboard suitcase.
With a pasteboard suitcase. Okay. So, you told me beforehand that you had been married four times. So, I'm not sure how you want to answer this question, but I want to get a sense of your married life in your family. So, you can handle this any way you want. From your first to your current wife, how did that was all in Michigan? All in the Washtenaw County area?
No, married was in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
It started in Tennessee. Your first wife was in Tennessee.
And I came to Michigan.
You came.
And I was drafted into the Army.
Oh, okay.
And when I come out of the Army, we separated.
Okay. How long were you in the service?
How long was I in which?
In the Army. How long were you in the Army?
In retirement.
In the Army? You said you were drafted in the...
I went to the Army in first of 40, right after I got in Michigan.
Okay, so...
They took me, drafted me back to Tennessee. And I had to go to Fort Benning. I had about 11 men I had to pick up. And I went to Fort Benning, Georgia, and the train was coming with just loads of black people that came from farms and came from other places. They had never seen the city. And we would sit and watch the white officers, how they would do the black people. And I was sitting studying all of that. And then we were shipped out after a certain amount of time to Mississippi. Biloxi, Mississippi, I'll never forget that. And we went down there and we trained. And then we got through training. And they didn't let us go to town. It was an all-black group there. It was thousands of Negroes, black.
And the service was still segregated then.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. White officers was all there was. And you had to do what the white officer said do. And if you walked around camp, your arm was going like that because you didn't know who the officer called. But anyway, I was down there. And after I got to train the men, I went to the office to see when we were going to town. Other groups was going to town in different places. And I had 59 men in. And the guy told me, no, white guy, no, you can't go down. Okay, I went back. We set up in the barracks and did different things. A couple of weeks later, I went back to the office and asked to go to town because I was the lead man. They told me that you'll go to town when we are ready. That didn't set horses with me. So the next time I asked him, I said, we're not going to town, is that right? You don't question me, you know. I said, okay. You know, after being there so long, and the guys kept arguing me, when are we going to town? When are we going? Well, I went to the office and I asked them at the office, look, are we going to ever go to town? He said, we told you we would let you know. But other guys that I'd made friends with in the camp, that they were gone to other places. So I said, well, look, you're not going to let the guys go to town, but I'm going to town. He said, well, how are you going to go to town? You ain't got no pass. You'll have to get a pass from the office here. I said, well, if you be in town tonight, I'll be there. The bus drove up that afternoon after dinner. I had a friend of mine. I'm telling this is now. The friend of mine, I said, when you get on the bus, go to the back of the bus. Drop your pass out the window, I'll catch your pass. And I'll go around when you get on the bus and I'll give you the pass back. He said, okay. And that's what we did. And I was in town. But being in town, the white officers, they go in town. You know, they did everything wrong, whatever they wanted to do, but that didn't set horses with me. And it just so happened late on the afternoon, mostly bars in town, I was going looking. I didn't drink, so I was going around looking at people. All it was, I spied that lieutenant, and he spied me. I stopped. Show me your pass. I didn't have one. I know you didn't have one. Stand right here. Blow the whistle. Two MPs come and got me.
So right it was quite a struggle. So
but, yep. Everything
was.
And went back to camp, and then so, that's when I got an attitude. Mm-hmm. I had an attitude from that day on. What I seen them do to them other black guys in the camp, I wasn't going to do it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do it.
Did that get you in trouble in the service?
Well, I got me in trouble mm-hmm. when he told me to come to the office, and I went to the office. And three or four officers sat down and they said, well, we're going to put you on a restriction. And you're not to leave camp, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so, and here's what we're going to put you doing. We want you to scrub this office. Scrub it clean. I sat down and I listened to him. He said, all of them went out. They was going home. One guy came back, lieutenant. He said his the basin and his toothbrush. We want you to scrub this whole place. I said.
So you put up with that for how many years did you see?
That same year. Mm-hmm.
Did you get an honorary discharge?
I got a discharge.
Discharge.
About Sherry, can you tell me? Huh?
Yeah.
Hello.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was in the 70s.
In the 70s.
It was in the 70s.
So you came back, and then you and that wife, the current wife, separated. And then what did you do when you got back?
I got back and went to work, whatever I could find right then. But it was ads in the paper, so mm-hmm. that's where I started from. Michigan Aluminum Casting Company, and went from there. I went to the University Hospital. And I stayed there 17 years.
17 years at the University Hospital? What were you doing there?
I was working as an orderly.
Mm-hmm.
The director, we set horses right together right then. He kind of liked me, and I liked the job. And I moved on up from there to a charge of emergency.
So when did you have your children? How many children did you say you had?
Four.
So when did you have your children?
Well, I married after me and my wife separated.
Mm-hmm.
And I had two children mm-hmm. by that wife. And the third wife, we had the son. One of the sons by mm-hmm. him. That made the first wife, second wife, third one, and made the four mm-hmm. wives. And my wife died. She worked at University Hospital too. She died from cancer. But she had an office there, and I had an office there. So she didn't know if she had it, but anyway, she passed on. Mm-hmm. So about 3 years before I was somewhere along that, I was separated. And I studied bonding. Mm-hmm. From there, I went to Lansing for a test. They had a test of 100 questions. I was the only black in the class, and it was about 40-something, nearly 50. I was the only black in the class. And I didn't think I was going to pass, but I passed. And a few white boys, we went for real estate and stuff like that. Didn't pay. Then I opened up my bonding company. And that was
about what year of when you
71.
71, your bonding company. Now, were your, any of your children still home then? Or
no.
No, everybody was gone.
Yeah.
And had you remarried?
I hadn't remarried.
You hadn't remarried, okay.
So your children
were gone. You opened the bonding company. And this was in the 70s, in the early 70s, okay.
1971.
And,
Paul, your son was home. You had your son at home. He was still home.
Oh, yeah, he was
younger.
He was.
I want to clarify that.
Okay. Yeah.
So you had one son at home during that time.
Yes.
How long did he stay home?
He didn't stay too long.
Mm-hmm.
And, I set him up in business.
Mm-hmm.
And
he went to college.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Your son went off to college.
And then, yeah.
All right, now, so you have this bonding company. Your son went off to college. And have you remarried yet? Yeah.
After 3 years of being single, I married.
Okay. And this is your current wife? Your current wife.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
all right.
That's my current wife.
Now, how did you all meet? I mean, how?
Well, I was dealing ministry at that time. And I had put out in several papers application for a secretary. I got 35 applications. And I didn't get a black application at all. I know what they were thinking. They don't hire blacks and this and that and other, so it needs to be put in. This is how it went. Because
mm-hmm.
I saw the sheriff, he come down and told me, he said, Paul, he said, I know a person that you don't have. You should interview too, he said. I said, I'm through with the applications of interviewing. I've narrowed them down to 5. And I said, I'm setting up dates for those 5. He said, well, you know, this good lady has, you know, been on college and this and that and other. Anyway, I said, no, Fred, I've got mine narrowed down to 5. He said, well, you know, he kept on, well, you know, she's a good girl. I said, well, you're the boss. I'm Donald. So I said, send her in. And she came in and interviewed. I looked, I said, this girl has topped all of them interviewing for me.
Mm-hmm.
That was my wife. There she is over there.
Okay. All right.
That was 36 years ago.
Oh, my. Okay. 36 years ago.
Yes.
Wow. So now it's she working?
Yes.
She's working.
She's been working for... A doctor, her first job working for a doctor,
mm-hmm.
was 17 years, mm-hmm. which it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then she told the doctor that she'd have to move on because she had learned all she could learn from him. And he said, okay. So she went to work for another doctor that wanted her there.
Okay.
And she's been on that job about 19 years now.
20 years in June.
Yeah, she's, and.
Okay. So you Did you enjoy what you were doing, your bondsman, your arc welding? What did you do with your arc welding?
Arc welding. When I went to the foundry, I was working in the foundry, and all the time I was thinking, this is not for me, but I'm going to buy paper every afternoon and find out what's in the paper that I like. And the line broke down in the foundry, the line that runs all through the foundry, take parts all through the foundry. Well, they didn't have nobody else there to arc weld and bust it loose. And I was working there, so nobody else could do it. So I told the foreman, I said, I can fix the line. You can fix the line? I said, yes. He said, How can you fix the line? I said, well, I had a little arc welding. He said, okay, that line is, give me the other stuff. I fixed the line was fixed in a little over half an hour. Started back running. Everybody was sitting down and they wanted to look at me. But he didn't promote me, so I once kept looking for a job. Mm-hmm. And that's how.
What part of your career work, which part did you enjoy the most? What part of your work did you really like to do?
I like to do arc welding.
You like the arc welding?
Yes, because I went to school for that. But it wasn't too much around here when I got here. Mm-hmm. It was still prejudice when I got here. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was still prejudice.
Mm-hmm. Very prejudiced. Okay.
But I had to fend my way.
What do you value most about what you did for a living?
Well, I know I had to make a living. I know I had to work for it. I knew I'd put money into the bonding, and that kept my eyes open 24 hours a day. I liked it. I enjoyed it. Going to the jails, getting people out of jail, I enjoyed it. Going to get bank robbers out of jail, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed all of that.
You enjoyed that. Now, was bonding the last thing you did, the last...
When the judges here cut out bonding, the judges, all the judges in the county here, called me over to a meeting and said, they in the courtroom, they got the courtroom now, said, we understand you're doing a good job. This is what they told me. We understand you're doing a good job. And they gave me a lot of stuff and they were guff. And then they said, what we want to do, we want to give you the authority to, when men get locked up for drug driving, and they name two or three other things, we want you to let them out when you think they are ready. You can let them out.
That's quite a responsibility.
I said, I can let them out. Yes. You all want me? I asked them again, you all want me to let them out? He said, yes, yes. Agar was the head of the judges at the time. Judge Agar. I know you might know him.
That was when you were jail administrator, right? That was as jail administrator that you were told that. She was not as a bondsman. You were jail administrator, and they told you you had the authority to let
no.
the guys out.
No.
Sorry.
They called me over there. I'll tell you about it.
Okay, sorry.
They called me over there and talked to me. And I finally said, okay, all right. So I could let people out, so I let one guy out. He lived in Detroit. And told him to go to Detroit. He had a wife and 6 or 7 kids. He was crying about it. Didn't have a job. Okay, I let him out. I let him out on Friday or Saturday when I let him out there. Give him money to get the bus ticket. He got a bus ticket and went to Detroit where he lived at. I was there. I worked 7 days a week, but I wasn't supposed to. I worked 7 days a week. Somebody was knocking on the outside door, just knocking right hard. You could hear him knocking on a Sunday. So I kept hearing the noise. So I told the jailer, I said, go out there and see who that is knocking on the side of the building. He went out and looked at the scene. It was some girls, you know them, but some girls. Anyway, and I seen, and he said, and the guy's name Thigpen. I said, I asked him what was his name. I said, Thigpen? He said, yes. I told him, open the door and let him come in. He came in, I came into the office. I asked Thigpen, I said, what are you doing back here? I let you out. Mr. Wiles, not come back here to stay. Come back here to stay, he said. Yes, he said, you treat me better than how you treat me at home. I said, you can't stay here. So when him talks to me, I said, you can't stay here. Mm-hmm. You know, but I treat him so nicely.
So this was the most rewarding to you, the bond and the jail administrator, helping people.
Helping older people, people that I knew, older people. I always like to help people with older than I was.
Okay. Now, what difference now in the career that you had? You've mentioned how prejudiced things were. What is the difference that you see now, currently, than when you were actively working?
Well, I liked the job that I was working at. Mm-hmm. I was with CSA. Mm-hmm. I got a chance to be CSA's boss for a while till I interviewed another girl from South Carolina and brought her in. I got the papers. I can't think of that. All these things I can't think of. That's why I said.
Can you tell if there's a difference now? And then when you were working, then the currently, in terms of less prejudice or easier to get the position, or?
I got the position. Al Wheel and I would work together for a good while. I got the position that they voted me in. I got the papers that showed how they voted me in. And I had in the county building, I had an office, was one of the judge's office. I had once a month for the people that was on my committee. And I had a committee of 22 or 23 members all around the county. But they voted me to.
Working with Mayor Al Wheeler, so.
Yes, and I was appointed by the judge. I mean, by the mayor.
You were appointed by a judge.
Yeah, I was appointed by a mayor here in Ann Arbor. He came to me, it took me a long time to get.
Okay, tell me how it was for you to live in the community in Washtenaw County, Ann Arbor. How?
Well, it was nice. I bought a home in Ypsilanti, and I sold a home and moved to Ann Arbor. I had a house built in Ann Arbor. And the way I got the house, they cleared off all the land, right off of Packard. Cleared all off the land, all the land. And I happened to drive there that one day, and I looked at the hotty section of the houses, so I liked it. So I went to the office. Well, the guy was in the office, a white guy, and I went to him, and I had looked at all the property, and I asked him, I said, what did he put this property to sell for? He said, well, he's telling you because we don't sell to black people, or Negroes or something, I don't know what he said. But anyway, he said, I said, what did you say? He said, we can't sell you this. My boss told me not to sell to Negroes. Oh, yeah. I said, okay. He still does, just like that. And you know what I was thinking, but anyway, I got in my car. I drove over to Dave Killen. Do you know Dave Killen?
Killing Concrete?
Yes, he owned all. I drove over to his house. It was on a Sunday. I rang the doorbell. His wife came to the phone. She said, oh, Paul, come in, come in. I went in. I was real hot. I wasn't laughing or nothing like that. And Mr. Killen was sitting in there, drinking a little bit. And I said, Paul, he said, what you want? I said, well, I went to see about buying some property. And I told him. And the guy told me he didn't sell to black people. Mm-hmm. He said, what? He said, that's what he told you? I said, yes. He said, well, wait till I finish this drink. He said, I'll go over there with you. So his wife, Ms. Cullen, said, yeah, you go over there, David. She said, he'd been, see what's wrong. He said, she can't do Paul that way. He said, anyway, I went with Dave Killen over there, and Dave Killen, he had Dave Killen written on his car, big cars, you know. We got out, it was kind of raining. We went in the office, and the guy in the office jumped up and looked at him and smiled. And I looked at him. He said, hey, young man, he said, you said a Nazi. He said, yes. He said, well, come on, let's go out here, I said, and let's look at some of the lots. I was with Dave, and he looked at me, he didn't say nothing. We went out there. Dave told me, which lot did you want? I pointed out, he said, okay, we went back. He said, my friend here wanted to buy one of the lots, he said. He said, but I was told, you know, well, I couldn't sell them no lot. He said, who told you that? He told him a real estate man name. Don't sell to black people. He said, well, young man, don't you sell that lot. He said, I'll talk to that man in the morning. Don't you sell that lot. Leave it right there. He said, yes, sir. The next morning, Dave Killen called a real estate man out and told him this guy come, a friend of his, wanted to buy a lot, and the man that you said don't sell. Well, just everything changed around then. Oh, well, yeah. Well, that's all right, he said. I want you to sell him that lot. He said, yeah, but I'll sell it. I had a house built up there.
So they sold you the lot after all that?
That was in Ann Arbor.
And that was about what year?
1967.
I don't know whether you tried to buy anything or anything now, but do you see a difference than when you tried to get that lot than now?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just a little difference.
Just a little difference. Okay. Um, When thinking over your life, tell me what you're most proud. What you're most proud of.
My kids.
Your kids?
Yes, my children.
Okay, you want to tell me about it? Tell me about them.
Well, my daughter, I haven't got a picture of my daughter over there, do I, Sherry?
No.
No? My daughter is 71. She just retired last year. She retired from, she was in the Army for 3 years. She was in the Air Force, what I was in, but it changed a little bit because she was a captain. And that's what I was. Anyway, she got out of, when her term was up for 3 years, she came back and went to a job, a head nurse out to men's prison. That's why she left. And she retired as the captain. I got the picture of her, the captain. I had it, I thought I did it. Mm-hmm. She draws a couple of checks, big checks.
So you're most proud of your kids. That's
one daughter. My other daughter just finished teaching school. She retired.
She's retired.
She is part of it. And I talk to her every week on the phone. Mm-hmm. My third daughter is, what is she, Sherry?
She has her own business with health food and natural products.
Yeah, okay. I can't think of all of them. So I'm proud of all of them. And my son, he's 55 or 56, what? I don't get in touch with him, but every now and then. And his son just finished high school last year and is going to community college for something.
He's at Eastern in nursing.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
anyways.
So you have a very productive family and you're very proud of them.
Okay.
Tell me, in thinking about your children and how successful they have become, and when you were growing up, can you tell me what some of the differences are between them being successful and some of the challenges you had to face?
In my childhood, I worked from the age I told you, up until I was 17, somewhere along 17. I worked summer school. I was working out of summer school, sort of summer schools up. We had, they lived in our block, I lived a half a block from my home, at home, was Jewish people. They lived in the back of the store. I worked at cleaning up, doing things. And ever since that time, I can remember, I worked at grocery stores and different things. It was me and my mother, that was all. My mother worked, she worked day work and whatever she could get. My mother works and she works for a dollar a day. I had to substitute.
So that's quite a difference than when you're bringing up your children. Tell me, what impact on you and your family with the election of the first African-American president, President Obama?
I was elated. was elated because I thought I would never see this day. He writes, I get letters from him. I was getting about once every month with a sherry. Pictures of Obama, he'd write, Paul, so. And I got a pile of stuff at home.
So it had a big impact on you.
Pardon?
A big impact on you.
Yes, yes. And I sent him money.
And you send it,
going,
you send him
money.
Okay. All right, I'm going to ask you one more question. What advice would you give to the younger generation with all your experiences and challenges and success in life?
Get an education.
Okay.
Get an education. Because I didn't have the chance.
Mm-hmm. You didn't have opportunities that there's so many now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is there anything you want to tell me that I didn't ask you?
There's a lot of things I want to tell you. Yeah, there's a lot of things, but mm-hmm. It takes a day or two or three, so like I said before.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of things happen. I marched with Martin Luther King. I met him out to the airport.
Really?
Yes. Senator Thayer. Do you know Senator Thayer? Mm-hmm. Senator Thayer was here and lived in Ann Arbor. Him and I were real tight together. He called me one day and said, Paul, I want you to do something with me. I said, do something? I'd always ask, do something with you. Yeah, I said, what do you want me to do with you? He said, well, I got an invitation to Martin Luther King. It's flying in here. It went on the trip. Anyway, he said, would you go with me to, now listen, this is, would you go with me to the march?
Mm-hmm.
I've never been to a march, and I've never been to that many people. He was meaning that many black people. Anyway, that's what I'm saying. So I said, yeah, I'll go with you. So the day came, the state police drove up in front of my house. He was in the car. He told me what time to be ready, and I got ready. I went out, they opened the car, got in the back of the car, rode out to the airport. Without that little while, the plane came in. And everybody was trying to rush around to Martin Luther King. Well, I was with the state police. I got a little more prep.
Where are we now with this march?
Airport. We out at the airport.
Here.
King came in.
In Detroit.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, yeah. One big airport here. Anyway, they were trying to get to him, but I got to him. I shook his hand, and I asked him how many times he'd been in jail. But the reporters was just diving in like birds. And he just couldn't hardly get nothing through, but I got his picture and all that thing at home. We went to Detroit in 1963 to the march in Detroit. I didn't have a pass from Lansing, so what we did, Senator Thayer told me, he said, Paul, I don't have but one pass to get it. He said, how am I going to get you in? He said, I ain't going to go without you. I'm going to get you in here. I said, let me study. I said, oh, I know what you can do. He said, what? I said, you go on, you sitting on the podium, you go on and go in there. I said, get up a little bit higher on the podium. He said, no, drop your pass down to me. Because I looked at his pass, he didn't have a pitch on his pass. Drop it down to me. Same as I told the boy in service. Anyway, he dropped it, he got up and sat up there, sat up for a while. I said, nah, he gonna bring me down and leave me. I said, and he finally got a seat over and dropped it. I got passed. Hold on.
Wow, what an experience.
Yeah, and so we all got in formation with the state police, and we was about the third or fourth car from King, and they had, you know, state police had motorcycle police was clearing the way all the way down to Detroit. That's that.
Paul, tell her about when you came to Ypsilanti in 1943, where you ended up and how you got to Ypsi. What was happening back in Ypsi?
That's why I say when I get through these stories, I came from Detroit.
No, you came in Detroit and there was the riot.
Oh,
Detroit,
yeah. That's what I'm going to tell. I came to Detroit, got off at the bus station, went to the I was catching a streetcar.
Where were you coming from?
Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Okay.
That's when I first came to Detroit.
When you first came up.
Yeah. And I kept seeing two police on every corner. I had just left home. My mother told me to leave home. She said, you gotta leave home. She said, of course the white folks gonna get in for you and kill you because you don't take nothing. So you don't take nothing. And she says, you better go up to Detroit. I had some kin people up there. So I got on the streetcar. I kept seeing two police on every corner, two big, burly police, white police. I kept looking. So when I asked the streetcar conductor, would he call out the street I had on paper? When he get there, and I would get off, I told him, you know, I didn't know him, but so he said, okay. So when he got to the street number, he was on a Hastings streetcar, Mack Avenue, where I was going to. So he called Mack Avenue. I got off, you know, this is jogging my mind, bringing back things. I got off at Mack Avenue. Two police was across the street. I got my little suitcase and I started looking at the numbers. And I finally seen the number. Went up on the porch, knocked on the door. Guy came to the door. I said, I'm Paul Watson. He said, Paul Watson? He said, yeah, well, anyway, we met. He said, I said, man, tell me what the white police is doing on every corner. He said, man, ain't you heard? I said, no. He said, man, that's a riot here. I had just left from Tennessee coming up here. I was on the police force when I come up here. I was the youngest person on the police force. The youngest person. I got pictures of me with detectives and different things. Anyway.
So you came up here and were in the middle of the Detroit riots.
Yes. I told him, I said, well, goodbye. I went back and called, went to the bus station and asked the bus that had the name of a person up here in Ypsilanti. I had never been up in Ypsilanti, and I called the bus and I told the bus driver, I said, The bus went from Detroit to Chicago, straight I-94, right through Ypsilanti, right on through. But they didn't have 94, I mean, they didn't have 94 then. They had Route 12 from Detroit, straight 12 all the way to Chicago. So he said, okay. So I was afraid I'd go to sleep because I'd been a couple of days trying to get that figured out. Started up Michigan Avenue, and he said, Ypsilanti, Ypsilanti. I said, and he cut the lights on. I said, wait just a minute, I'm coming. I almost overslept it. And I got off the bus. No lights, no nothing. I'm all in dark. I stood there. I couldn't see nothing. I said, Lord, what have I done to myself here now? I said, well, the bus was going straight that way. I said, the best I can do is take my suitcase, just follow the bus, where the bus went. And every now and then I'd see a car that didn't have many cars in. Every now and then I would see a car.
Did you have relatives or friends that you were going to meet there?
I didn't have nobody. But the name of a guy that used to, he was from Chattanooga, Tennessee, but I'd never seen him and I didn't know him. But he liked my cousin. She was a pretty nice little girl. But her mother didn't let her court, but they were court male. Anyway, I kept walking. And finally, I was just thumbing a truck stop a little ways up from me, about almost half a block. And the guy got out. He said, come on, come on. He had three guys in the truck, three white fellas. And I started not to get on that bus because some told me what had happened down Tennessee. But one man said, yep, you better get on the bus. Well, if anything happened to me, I just thought of a lot of things. Anyway, he drove on. He said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to Ypsilanti. He said, well, we're going to Chicago. He said, well, I'll drop you at Ypsilanti. Three of them. I was thinking the whole time I was riding that bus. So we got to the heel of Ypsilanti and Huron Street. And a light caught over his head with one or two or three lights in Ypsilanti. And I jumped off before he even told me to jump off. And I thanked him. And he said, okay, you're welcome. So I'm out of town, and nobody in the town but me. So I looked up, and I saw a fellow coming on the north side of Ypsilanti. I waited till he got pretty near me, and I seen he was a white guy. I said, oh, God, I said, mister, I said, could you tell me where the nearest police station is? He said, yeah. You go down that way, you go down this way, you go down this way. And you see a little light, that's the police station. Thank you. Me and my suitcase started following the trail. We went and we found the police station. It was a house. A house the police was in, setting up the desk. I opened the door and I went in. Because it was, it had a screen door in there. The sergeant was sitting behind the desk. Can I help you, boy? Struck me again. Don't call me boy. But I didn't tell him. I told him, well, what was I looking for? Dormitory. It was two dormitories in Ypsilanti. One on Warden Street, and the other was on Harrod Street, 72 men to a dormitory. Anyway, he told me what I wanted. You go up here, 7 blocks. You come over, you go 2 blocks. It was around 11 o'clock or sometime right at that time. No lights. I went to walk. I followed his directions, turned, came right to the dormitory. The guys was in a black dormitory, all of black. Went in the dormitory. I asked the guys, did they know Robert Johnson? They told me, well, a lot of them told me they didn't know him. Mm-hmm. And then they said, well, he'll be in about 12 o'clock. He's out partying. Some of all the guys out partying. You just sit over there on that couch. Anyway, I sat over on the couch. When I woke up, it was 1:30.
Wow. So that was your introduction to Ypsilanti.
Yes.
That's how you got
But
it.
When I got to about 1:30 when I woke up, there was a guy coming down the hall going to the latrine. And I asked him, I said, what am I said, do you know Robert Johnson lives here? He said, yes. I said, where do you know where he lives? He said, he lives across the hall from me. I said, yeah. He said, gave me the number of his. I went down there, knocked on the door. Not here. I stopped him again. He said, who is it? Anyway, Ben woke up at that time. I said, Paul. He said, Paul who? Paul Watson. I don't know no Paul Watson. I said, yeah, you do. I said, you like my cousin. You wrote a letter from Chattanooga, Tennessee. And you did. I was outside. He said, Chattanooga, Tennessee. I said, you from Chattanooga, Tennessee? I said, yeah, that's my cousin. Oh, wait just a minute. Wait a minute. He got up, snatched that door, and his BBDs, whatever, in the room was just a little room they charged $5 a week. Anyway, come in, sit down. He wanted me to talk. How's Vivian? I just wrote a letter the other day, and all that, went through all that. He said, where are you living at now? I said, I'm not living nowhere. And I told him I'd come. He said, well, you can spend the night here with me. And the bed was about like this. And he said, you can sleep. You can get to sleep. You can, if you want to, you can bunk over in the bed with me. And he said, you can bunk butt to pocket. I said, okay. I went to sleep there. When I know the thing, he was waking me up, talking about, Paul, it's time to get up. I get up this time morning, I had to be out to the foundry. So get up, put your clothes on. So I had my same clothes on. I went down, we walked. There was about a mile and a half we had to walk. We went down to the foundry. He said, I know the foreman here. He said, he's a pretty good guy. He said, we come and go with me. He had a cart that came in, pulled by another car. People sold sandwiches off there in the morning for breakfast, had all kind of stuff. So I ate, and he said, come on, we go up to the office. I went up to the office, I sat down. The guy came in, and he told him, he said, this is my cousin. He's from my same hometown. And he'd come see about getting a job. He said, I told him that you would give him a job. And we talked and he asked me, do you have any iron-toed shoes? I said, no, I've got the shoes I got on now. He said, well, we got a commissary downstairs. Do you have the money? I didn't have no money. I had $2.50 then. That was all I had. He said, well, on the strength of Robert, he said, Robert's been with us a good while, and he knows he's a good worker. And Robert was making $200-some a week. That was a whole lot of money.
That was a lot back then.
So he said, he got the book out. He said, wrote, he said, I'm going to write you a $50 advancement. Because Robert know you, I want you to go downstairs and get you some high-toed shoes. Thank you. I went downstairs. I was bigger than I am now, but I went downstairs, grabbed me some high-toed shoes, and I had some money left because it didn't cost it, but he advanced me for the money. So I had the shoes. So he said, take this note down to the foundry boss, and he'll show you what you have to do. I went down there. The boss, you know, it was white. He told me, he said, you get that wheelbarrow. I said, okay. He said, come with me. And the train run in there throughout the foundry, running, running. Big box car there. He said, I want you to get the wheelbarrow full of sand and take it into the foundry and give it to the molder. I said, okay.
So that was your first job in?
That was my first
job in the
foundry. I said to myself, Paul, this is not for you. So I worked there for a little while. But I was getting the paper every day. Every day I'd buy paper just to find out what
was going on.
And then I seen a job that I thought I would like would be better than that. That hot iron. So I, before that job, there was another job in that one. It was eating because we didn't have no place to eat. Black people didn't have no place to eat. So, I was the lady sold.
No, they had no place to eat in Ypsilanti?
Right. The lady that sold food lived on First Avenue. She sold bread, bologna, milk, and pop. That was all she sold. You go up and get you some bologna, stack it up, bring it down there, but you couldn't keep it in the room. Because the women had come in the morning, they reported everything to the guy in the office what was in there. So you couldn't have nobody or nothing in the room, but I slept in there. But anyway, I seen an ad in the paper, dishwasher. Lord, I never washed dishes. I see you get a lot when you're growing up home around your mother. And you have to do a certain thing. But anyway, I told him, I said, well, I want to come down and see about dishwasher. I said, okay. I went down and see about dishwasher. He said, well, it's from 4 to 12 or something like that. Boy, that was just right because in the foundry, when we got through, we had showers and the men did. We'd all take a shower in front of him. I said, I'll take it. He said, okay. He said, can you be here at 4 o'clock? I said, yes. Then I was working two jobs to get that money to send to my mother. And I kept looking in the paper. I didn't stop. And then I said,
working two jobs, one at the foundry and one
and
dishwashing.
Pouring metal. I know I wasn't pouring metal and I was washing dishes, but I seen the paper. I kept reading the paper. I seen another job at a Michigan aluminum casting company. I applied down there to that Michigan aluminum casting company. The guy said, can you pour metal? I said, yes, I can pour metal. Had never seen any metal pole, didn't know. I didn't know what metal was. He talked to me, he said, can you report down there in the morning at 5 o'clock, 5:30? I said, yes. He said, okay, be down here in the morning. I said, does that mean I've got a job? Yes. Why'd you think I told you that? Some tell me many men were getting. Anyway, I was down there the next day. And they had the pots there and the aluminum. Bars of aluminum about like this here. It weighed about 60 pounds. It took one slot in the box. Anyway, some black guys doing that. Well, the black guys, I got along with them. I would ask them questions. I got along with them. They told me how to do the pots and how to put the pigs. They call them pigs, how you put them, all of that. And I said, well, when your pot get full and you get ready to pour your, show me how you pour. This is the truth. I'm telling you the truth. He said, okay. He showed me how to pour. The man made the molds. The mold hole was that about this big round. That hot metal, you had to pour it in that hole for it to go in there. Goes to every part, and it freezes in no time. Aluminum. I learned in that day I had Pat pouring metal. Actually, twice as much money as the founders did. Huh? So I moved from that. I'm kept moving, just move on. Did I get to the right spot where I figured that was made for. And I finally got to it. It was University Hospital. I started as an orderly. I worked myself up. I came there one day, a sister did the hand. You know, one of the nuns, she did the hand. I went in there. She said, I don't know whether I've got some. Anyway, yeah, here's one here. Okay, I'll take it, whatever it is. She said, well, this one is working in the drug department or something like that. I said, boy, that sounds like just what I want to myself. Well, I'll take you down there. Took me down there. Introduced me to the guy who hit him. She went on. The guy said, well, you come over here. I want you to start washing all them bottles that they had different segment of different bodies in. I looked at that. Oh, this ain't what I wanted. So I worked that day, cleaning them nasty, stinking jugs out. I went home. I didn't go back. 2 weeks, what? I couldn't find a job nowhere. Mm-hmm. I came right back to that lady that hired me. She didn't even know she had hired me for the job. She was about 60-some years old, nun, you know. She said, oh, yeah. Mr. Watson, I think I got a job for you. I was looking. She said, yes, come with me. I didn't know I had been working that right. day.
Well, you've had quite a bit of work experience, and
what?
I just want to thank you for remembering all this.
Well, you jogged my memory. You really jogged
your memory.
It's a lot of stuff.
A lot. Fruitful life.
Went through to get to these parts. Mm-hmm. Nobody never know how much.
Right.
I worked all my life.